football on off the ball.
To start with my brother from another mother, Patrick Kluivert, you had Edgar David, you had Frank Rijkaard, you had, and if I need to name one, Frank Rijkaard was of course the man.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.
Hello, you're very welcome along to another episode of The Green Scene, where we dive into all things Irish football. Delighted to be saying, I am joined by Matthew Brennan. Matthew.
How are you, David? How's it going?
All good.
How is... A bit of a duo here.
Yeah, it's a bit of a duo.
Ben?
Ben is at the side of a road somewhere, broke down. So if you see Ben, I don't know, some road around Dublin, pull over and give him a shout and give him a hand, because, yeah, he's...
He's in struggle town.
He's stranded a wee bit, yeah. But look, he'll be grand. We'll just kick into it straight away. It's been a fairly busy week in the all things Republic of Ireland. They played, obviously, last week against Qatar. They won the game 1-0. Mm. Nathan Collins scored an early goal.
A good header.
And it was, I tell you what, it wasn't the most entertaining of games.
No, after that. What was the atmosphere like? I'm always intrigued by this sort of stuff for these games. Obviously, we touched on the price point. Not sure it would have had too much of an effect on the attendance, but was it enjoyable? It was a nice evening.
Lovely evening for football, as they say. It was grand. It was the crowd was there waiting for something to get behind, and you felt like the players were going to do that until the red card happened, and the whole kind of the structure of the game, the structure of the team, kind of changed. The biggest takeaway I have from it is, like, Qatar are a pretty terrible football team, and they're obviously on the way to the World Cup next week. They're in a group with Canada, Switzerland, and Bosnia.
Yeah,
it's not like a World Cup group that really kind of sets the pulses racing.
I wouldn't mind if those games are on at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of, from my initial research into it, that's kind of what's happening anyway. Okay. So. Yeah, Julian Lopetegui was sitting in front of me, which is a bit mad. He's obviously getting very well paid for his job in Qatar. But the main takeaway from the game is they're not really good. And Ireland could have maybe scored more goals if they had 11 players on the pitch. And even with 10 players on the pitch, they were still by far the better team.
Still the better team, yeah. I thought that myself from watching along. Obviously not in the stadium. The red card is a real shame.
Yeah.
Like, never a red card. I think we can all pretty much all agree with that point. And a horrible moment, I suppose, for Jack Moylan. Like, you would really feel for him, considering how well he played when I was over there watching him in Murcia against Grenada. Obviously, I was going to say a much higher quality of opponent, but a higher quality of opponents against Qatar. Not probably by that much. But having a home debut wearing the green jersey in the Aviva Stadium, I'm sure all of his family were there. And a bit of a late call-up too. Like, he wasn't, I suppose, intending on being there. Wasn't planning on being there the whole time, so... Very disappointing, and something I'm sure he'll be hoping to put right, even though he didn't really do anything wrong.
No,
over the next little while,
he had the assist for the Collins goal. I suppose after that, I saw Qatar were flying out in a big Qatar Airways plane on the way to the States they're on the way to Canada. Actually, obviously, they're playing their games in Canada for the World Cup, and Ireland duly followed them. It's a bit less fanfare to Canada. They're out there this very week, and they're probably is Jade Newman doing some exams as we speak now?
Yeah, I think he's probably doing English Paper 1, you tell me.
Yeah, I think so.
He's looking at doing that. I think one of the maths papers at 4:30 in the morning on Friday or something ridiculous like that. Fair play to him, because I know I wouldn't have been any good for that.
Yeah,
would have been fairly distracted. Before we move off to the Qatar game, I was floating around Dublin. It was on Thursday, wasn't it? Thursday night. Yeah, floating around Dublin Thursday night. Met a few of my friends, and was in one of the bars. Came across a man who was fond of the Green Scene.
Nice.
Andrew. I'm not entirely sure where Andrew was from, but Andrew and his friend Niall, was telling me, I'm looking at his friend Niall after, obviously, I'd been talking to Andrew. Niall is heading to Guadalajara.
Still?
Well, he booked it after Budapest.
That's class.
And he decided, you know what? Listen, there's going to be no World Cup for me as far as the Irish national team are concerned, but I'm going to go and spend a couple of weeks in Guadalajara. So that was on Thursday that he texted me and said Niall was off in 2 weeks. So I'm sure Niall's not the only one that booked a few flights and a bit of accommodation and Mexico wasn't a bad place to book it. I say he booked it after Budapest. I assume he booked it after the draw, which was, of course, still pre-Prague.
Yeah.
And I'm sure many people, other people have, but interesting stuff. If you're going, let us know.
Yeah. If you are still on the way to Mexico or the US for any of the games, I know a friend of mine had a ticket for the second game, which would have been in Atlanta.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if he's still going or not. I don't think he is, but there will be an Irish contingent out there. Guadalajara, I've been to Guadalajara. It's not the most exciting city in the world.
You might do a bit of travelling.
Yeah, but the best thing about Guadalajara is that it's close to the town of Tequila.
And I wonder what they sell there.
So you can get leather drunk in Jalisco, in Guadalajara, and in the state of Jalisco, and in the town of Tequila, and you'll have a lot of fun there. And there'll be a lot of, like, you know, I guess there will be some, maybe South Africans and some Czechs.
Yeah.
That would be all there supporting their teams. But yeah, interesting next couple of weeks. It's a bit of a shame that we're not obviously
absolutely
there.
Absolutely.
Especially looking at Scotland this week.
Oh yeah, they're going to be on an absolutely mental one. But it is. Look, at the time we knew that there was going to be a bit of pain when it happened, obviously. And then there was going to be a little bit more pain down the line when we got to now and we were looking at everyone else. To be fair, there's so much going on in the world of sport and football in general that we kind of haven't had this empty period of a long empty period of nothingness where we had to think about the fact we weren't going to the World Cup. It's only kind of coming to us now, and the World Cup is starting next week. It's not easy, but at the same time, I'm not feeling terrible about it. I'm not overly excited about the World Cup either, though, but that's probably because I just haven't thought about it a whole lot. But if you are heading over to anywhere, Canada, Mexico, USA, let us know. We'd love to hear from you. If you live there, if you're going to be going to any of the games, you're going to be around the place, we might actually get you on if you want.
Yeah. A long period of nothingness.
Yeah.
That might be the podcast title for this episode.
Away with words.
Yeah, no, we had, I suppose, the interesting thing, we had Jade Newman making his debut, Mason Mealy obviously coming on last week as well. All them lads are obviously
Corey and Dabba, one of the great interviews.
Yeah, just before that, Corey and Dabba and his family was sitting right in front of me.
Yeah.
And I actually kind of forgot about this in the pre-show chat that we were having, but it actually warmed the cockles of my heart to see his parents, I presume his parents and siblings were all there. They're all absolutely just delighted and over the moon. Actually, even though I don't know Corey and Dabba at all, it even make me a little bit emotional thinking, oh, it's actually so nice to see that this fella who's come from, I think from like junior football in Dublin, and he's out playing in Serie A with Lecce, and then all of a sudden he's making his senior Ireland debut, and I think he called it to Ben. He said it was the best day of his life. So
he said a few times,
which is
it's a lovely interview,
which is really really nice, and it's still available on your podcast feed and your social channels as well. But that was great to see, and that's why maybe these games, the best thing about these games that they're happening now, that people kind of get these opportunities to don the green shirt and in their eyes, they hopefully have done enough to impress Hemel Grimson and his coaching staff.
It's good for them to know they're being recognised.
Exactly,
You know, regardless of whether they're going to be involved in any of the big squads that are coming for the competitive games over the next little while. In fact, they know that there are eyes on them, important eyes on them. Mm-hmm. That'll only elevate their game, you know.
Yeah. So next for Ireland, the men's team is Friday night into Saturday morning, half past 12 kickoff in Montreal against Canada. We're waving off Canada to the World Cup, which is a little bit disappointing. But we were thinking, should we do a watch along for that game? We just get a load of cans and watch the game. No, maybe you shouldn't do that.
A load of Cadbury's chocolate.
Yeah, a load of Cadbury's chocolate. Let's get drunk on Cadbury's chocolate and watch that game.
Yeah. What's the thing? It's bread, isn't it? Eat enough bread. Bread has like trace amounts of alcohol in it or something. Feeding up bread,
get drunk. Like, how much bread do you need to get drunk? Like
the whole HQ of Brennan's bread.
I don't know. I think this is the biggest tangent we've ever gone on. We've gone in a few tangents as well.
Yeah. It's that time of year.
It is. But like, without further ado, let's kind of move on. I suppose the biggest thing from the game last week was the stop the game protests, and we kind of purposely didn't bring this up last week because we were just kind of excited and we want to talk about the players that have been called into a squad for the very first time, especially the League of Ireland contingent and some of the younger players. But the stop the game protests are obviously in opposition to the upcoming games with Israel in the Nations League in the autumn of this year. Now, we were due to record yesterday, as we normally do on a Tuesday, but from over the weekend, we looked like there was going to be an EGM, an emergency general meeting, called to possibly implement a boycott of these games. That has been shelved because I guess too many, you know, the women's team are also playing on Friday in a huge World Cup qualifier, and I think everyone is all over the place. That's been kicked down the road a little bit. It only can go so far before it'll come back on the agenda. Sinn Féin are bringing a proposition next Tuesday to the Dáil about an official boycott of these games against Israel. And obviously the players and the coaches have been asked about it plenty because it's been the biggest talking point in the last couple of weeks. And unfortunately, it's probably only going to get bigger over the next few weeks and few months as well.
Are you at all surprised that the questions have come already? Because I'm not myself, but the games against Israel are still quite a way away, but they're not quite a way away in the context of wanting to implement some form of boycott. So if the games are not going to go ahead, that's going to have to be a decision that has come to relatively soon.
Yeah. Yeah, but see, like, now is where you nominate the location you will play, the stadium that you will play at for your Nations League games. Obviously, the games in Dublin, obviously Ireland will play the games in Dublin. That's what the plan is. They'll play against Kosovo and they'll play against Austria in Dublin, the Aviva Stadium. The Israel game, it looks like from the weekend that the government are planning to move the game. And I think the deadline on this is like the next couple of days.
Yeah.
It has to be like 100 and...
I remember talking about that at the time.
Yeah.
It seems so far away, but I know, here it is.
Like 130 days, whatever, before the actual games. We're about 3 months away from them now. People have to plan and obviously, you know, like logistics, like for players and teams and coaches and for like referees and different things as well. It looks like the Israeli game, the Israeli home game, the game for Israel that they would elect to play at home will be moved from Israel and probably played in Hungary.
That's not what they were hoping for initially.
No, initially they said they'd welcome Ireland to Bloomfield Road in Tel Aviv.
Is that what their stadium's called?
I remember that from the 21s playoff games there a couple of years back. That's not going to happen, obviously. Those games will look like they'll happen outside of Israel. And Ireland looks like they might have to play their game outside of Dublin. There's obviously a safety concern and different things, but the stop the game protest happened in the 10th minute against Qatar. I think it happened again in the 20th minute.
Yeah.
There was tennis balls thrown onto the pitch, and the game was stopped to make a statement. And quite, several people came out in the aftermath. I think the most obvious one was Richie Sadler speaking on RT and basically very eloquently putting, you know, that these games should not go ahead, and maybe we just take the hit, we just take the boycott, we take the loss of the 6 points, and look, that's just the, you know, we make our bed and we just lie in it, and that's what we kind of have to do to make a stand. We've been kind of thinking about what we're going to be talking about today and different things, and I suppose David Carell, the FAI CEO, was chatting to myself back about 2 months ago, and this is what he said when the initial kind of conversations were happening around the draw for the Israel game.
So I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. Obviously, this is still relatively fresh news, and all of the different stakeholders in the game are starting to have their say on it, which is completely understandable. We obviously did place a huge emphasis on our players, and we contacted quite a range of them to, I suppose, gauge their reaction to the situation and to outline the logic and reason for the association's decision to fulfil the games. And credit to the players, they said they would respect the decision. So that is something that we will obviously keep on watch and make sure that we support them. I've always been never had any opposition, I should say, from anyone finding their voice. So I take no objection to that. But based on what we know, what we understand from the broad sample that we have spoken to, they recognise and will respect the FAI decision.
Yep. So that was David Carell, FAI CEO, speaking to me back about 2 months ago at the FAI strategy plan launch back at the Aviva Stadium. We're going to play a bit of Daniel Lambert, who is maybe, let's say, the main kind of ringleader, who is going to bring this motion of the Israeli boycott and the suspension of Israel from both FIFA and UEFA for breaking statutes, which they still continue to break even now. And this is Daniel Lambert, obviously the CEO of Bose as well, and the manager in ECAP. He was speaking to Owen Sheehan and Owen Doyle back in the news round when the draw was made back in November.
Yeah, well, I think the General Assembly, I suppose, are the voting members of the FAI. Obviously, the FAI executive have released a statement today. What I'd say is that nobody should be in this position. The FAI shouldn't be. Players, I'm sure, will come under pressure. They shouldn't be. Fans, I'm sure, will be already. I've got lots of messages from people saying they won't travel, they'll hand back season tickets. None of us should be in this position, because this situation is already legislated for in the UEFA statute. There's a rule book there, and that rule book exists for really good reason, to prevent the situation that we now find ourselves in. Ireland and other nations and UEFA are being done a total disservice by the UEFA Executive Committee. UEFA or Israel should not be competing in any UEFA competitions right now. That is absolutely crystal clear. It's not my view. As I said, it's just an objective fact. And those rules exist for really good reason, and none of us should need to make this decision. And I'd call actually on the Irish government, other high-profile Irish sports people, people within the game, outside of the game. We should all be absolutely calling for UEFA to suspend Israel, because we should not be put in this position. And UEFA should expel Israel, suspend and then expel. And nobody should be made to play Israel at the moment. They shouldn't be allowed to play in any UEFA competition.
Yeah, so that was Daniel Lambert speaking back when the draw was made. I think it's important to think, you know, about the couple of key points are both made in those last two clips that we played. David Krell speaking about, you know, that he respects what the players' decisions would be if they don't decide to play against Israel.
He was also saying that, from speaking to the players, his understanding was that they would respect whatever decision the FAI came to.
Yeah.
And that has been echoed, to be fair, in some of the interviews where, it was Nathan Collins
yeah,
saying that it's a decision for the FAI. Mm-hmm. Players will have certain views. We'll support each other in whatever those views turn out to be. But Daniel Lambert makes the point there as well about UEFA and about how it's in their rule book, and
they're not following their own
rule book. They're not following their own rule book. And that's where I have said from the start that my sympathy would always be with the manager and the players to a certain degree, because it's a poison chalice in a sense. No matter what they say, it's not going to be right. And it's not the same thing as when a certain, you know, for example, when Eddie Howe goes in to manage Newcastle under Saudi ownership, he's made the decision to take a job there. So he therefore has to...
He was already in charge, though, of Newcastle when the... Oh, no, sorry. No, he wasn't. Sorry,
yeah,
they brought him in.
Yeah.
Sorry,
So when he does that and he makes that decision, he's entitled to be asked about what's going on and why he's decided to take that job. It's a bit different here because it's a national team. It's a different competition. It's a different setup altogether. There's no direct ownership over a football team.
Yeah.
You know, there are people who run the football team to make sure everyone runs smoothly. The leadership across the board here has, from the very beginning, right? So you can point fingers wherever you want to point fingers, right? My main gripe at the start was the fact that when the draw was made initially for the Nations League, Hamer Hagrimsson was left to deal with the media.
Mm-hmm.
And not just the Irish media. The global media wanted to know what the manager of the Republic of Ireland national team had to say about this issue. There were representatives from the FAI there on that day. They had a statement prepared to go and put out that statement, but didn't speak. They left it to Hamer. Now, that's one area where that could have been better, for sure. The FAI is the football organisation for the Football Association of Ireland, right? So their priority is, of course, football. Mm-hmm. UEFA has got the word football in its name as well. FIFA has got the word football in its name. But where the difference comes in is that UEFA have these rules that they are supposed to follow, and they've opted not to follow these rules. FIFA have set a precedent where they didn't have to do any of this. They didn't have to get involved in any political ways of thinking or anything like that, but they have decided to become friendly with the likes of Donald Trump. They've decided to act in such a way and have differing views on similar situations. As Hamer has referenced multiple times, they've acted one way with Russia and they've acted one way with Israel. And the situations, of course, are not absolutely identical. Of course they're not. With something like this, you're never going to find two identical situations, but they fall under the same category. But the main thing is, of course, that they're setting up football teams in areas that they do not control, that are not theirs,
yep.
You know? And that's the rule that they've broken, and therefore they shouldn't be competing. That doesn't answer the question as to whether these games are going to be or should be boycotted or not go ahead.
Yeah.
Because that's a whole other can of worms that you have to open. There's also the issue as well, as far as leadership goes, with the Irish government. In Nathan Collins comes out and says that he feels as though it's an FAI decision, which of course the decision is not his. The decision is whether these games go ahead. That is up to the people who are kind of not put in these positions to make these decisions, but it does become your role when you're there. The FAI then have come out and said, look, it's a government type thing, and then the government have spoken and have said it's up to UEFA, it's up to FIFA. So everyone's pushing the kind of blame around here. It's not blame, pushing the responsibility around.
Yeah.
And you're not really getting anywhere.
No.
And when you have ministers coming out and saying that they're not going to attend the fixture because they don't want to be associated with it, it very plainly looks like, well, you don't want to be pictured there on this occasion when all this stuff is happening, that the wider public is quite unanimous in thinking that there's probably a way to go about this that isn't normal, and the games can't go ahead as normal. So for a person in a position of leadership to turn around and go, well, I'm not going to go.
Yeah.
It doesn't set a great precedent.
No, I like what you've kind of mentioned there is like there's the legal issue where what kind of Daniel Lambert spoke about all those months ago. There's also like, you know, it's the moral question as well. And I think that's, you know, the biggest thing, I think, when it comes to these games over the next few months. Like you mentioned there, Minister of Sport, Patrick O'Donovan, saying that, you know, the game should go ahead and he won't be in attendance for them. We have Micheál Martin coming out during over the weekend as well, the Taoiseach, saying that, you know, Irish football needs to look after its best interests. Well, how about we just like show a bit of backbone and we just make a stand, you know. I was reading a bit about the South African boycott last night, and you know that eventually worked. It took some pain and it took some time, but you know apartheid was removed in South Africa eventually. So why not Ireland be world leaders in this? And I think the fans, and we all love the Irish football team, we want to see the Irish football team do well, but I think the fans would respect the players and the coaching staff to make a stand over these games, because there's nothing coming from the government and there's nothing coming from the FAI. And, you know, I don't even think, you know, Micheál Martin has, I don't think he has really much of a backbone really to make a tough decision. He's constantly talking about leadership, and he had a go at Richard Boy Barrett last week in the Dáil as well. And there's absolutely no justification to play these games against Israel. There's just no way you can play these games. They've continuously broken rules. They're continuously, you know, incurring into South Lebanon. Even in the last 24 hours, they've taken a place called a strategic place in Lebanon called Beaufort Castle, which they took in 1982, and were there till the year 2000 before they retreated back. There's no way that you can play against a state like this, and unfortunately, you know, the Israeli football team represent the Israeli state.
Yeah. The only thing I would say, and I'm slightly playing devil's advocate here, but it's more just of a point that I know came into my head when you said it about there being no justification to play these games. There's no justification for these games to be happening. You know, there's no justification for the Republic of Ireland football team to have been put in this position.
Yeah.
But when you are put in this position, there is reasons as to why it is difficult to not play them. It's not an easy thing to decide we're going to boycott these games. And that doesn't mean that it's you shouldn't do it, because some of the best things in life aren't easy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that there probably is a world where the games do go ahead in some way, shape or form. But I think if that is to happen, there should be an active kind of decision to call out all that you do, whatever opinion there is on it from anyone involved in the game, call it out and make a stand in that way. But as you say, and Richie Sadler put it very well and painted a very good picture on RTE that night, and that's something I think hadn't really been done before.
No.
In standing there on the pitch and pointing up here to where the flag is going to be, and pointing over there to where a representative is going to be, and pointing over there to where the fans are going to be. That's not a nice thing to think about. And it's not going to be a nice thing for a lot of players either.
Yeah.
So I think it is difficult. It is difficult, even though we all know what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, you know, Ireland have, I think, a relatively favourable Nations League draw. And this is, I'm only speaking about the sporting side of it now, but like, there's an opportunity to put yourself in a really good position to get a really good go at the Euros in Euro 2028 by having a very successful Nations League campaign. But I think, you know, 95% of the country, maybe even more than that, would be totally okay with giving up these 6 points. There's bigger things than football. And, you know, I know he's not the captain of the country anymore, but he's still the leader of this Irish football team. And Seamus Coleman spoke about this last week in at the press conference. And we'll let you hear what he had to say here.
My views are very clear in the fact that Nathan and the younger players in Ireland and the fans and the manager, that shouldn't have landed on our toes to answer questions about this. It should have been dealt with above us. I said to Tony earlier, I'm a dad, I'm a husband, I've got a heart. I know the difference between right and wrong. So it's if I ask you the same question, I'm sure you're off the same opinion of what's happening. It's awful. It's extremely sad, and it's a very difficult position for the players to be in. I don't think we should be in this position, absolutely not. But of course, we've got to answer on it. And as I touched on with my points, it's very uncomfortable.
So when you say above, you mean FAI, government, UEFA?
Yeah, you know, FAI, UEFA, whatever it is. I feel like it shouldn't have landed on 22, 23, 24 year old lads that are here to play for their country. It shouldn't have landed in theirs. So we represent our people, the people of Ireland, so we've got to take that into account of what their opinion is on it all as well. And you know, it's not straightforward either, so that's the human side. That's so important. And like everyone in here, like the manager talked on, it shouldn't have been on our toes. And then there's the football side and the sanctions and everything that comes with it. But very difficult for us players, difficult for the manager, difficult for all the staff that we're dealing with this. But of course, you know, our feelings as human beings on it.
Yeah, Seamus Coleman, we represent the people of Ireland. So yeah, this Israeli football team represent the people of Israel. And of course, there are people in Israel that object to the war and what's going on.
Absolutely.
In Gaza and in Lebanon as well. But, you know, when it comes to the crux of it, the national football teams represent the people of those countries.
He gets it, doesn't he?
He does get it. Like, he does get it. And if, God, we had people like Seamus Coleman in the Dáil, then, you know, this could be... Yeah, this could be maybe rectified in a much better way, in a much quicker way as well. But I do feel like what he mentioned there, the 22 and the 23 year olds, like, you're watching, like I mentioned earlier, Corey and Dabba making his debut for Ireland. What an unbelievable, you know, feeling that was for him and his family. And then could you imagine if you're making your debut in this game against Israel? It's it's a poisonous thing.
That's what I mean. It's just a horrible situation. It's just if the things you do to make this whole situation not happen, you know, would have been great.
Yeah,
but at the same time, these things have to come to a boiling point to some degree. And
like, you know, like it's obviously this kind of moral quandary for here, for people in Ireland, for the football team, for the coaches, the players. Obviously, it pales in comparison what's going on in the occupied territories.
Absolutely, so it's
in Palestine and in Gaza and in Lebanon as well. I think we're ultimately all in agreement that the game should not go ahead. You know, it even leaves like media in a difficult situation. Not that anyone should care about their situation, but like, you know, like, how do you cover those games? How do you, like, you can't possibly speak about those games in just only a sporting context.
No, you can't. No,
and people will say, oh, you can, you know, keep politics out of sport. Like, that is the biggest load of bollocks. It's impossible. Like, you just cannot do that. Like, especially in international football.
And to a degree, that is the fault of the sporting organisations.
Yeah,
as well. You know, it's always been, you know, especially with international sport, in that it's a patriotic thing, and you know, governments have always used it as a sort of vessel for positivity, and you know, it's been used in the past to kind of bind nations together and put their differences behind them and all that sort of thing. Like, but you're right, like they are just entwined now. And I don't think that's something that can be overturned, and it's not a nice thing to accept. It's kind of just one of those things. It's just a way of life, really, isn't it? Getting their grubby hands all over something that was once so beautiful. But still has beauty to it. It does still have beauty to it, for sure. And it can be used in a positive way as well. Like, you know, you can look at it from both ways too. But as you say, like, there's no way in which the game should be going ahead, but there's also no way in which the decision should be left to the players and the management. Yeah. And also, to be honest, to be totally honest, as much as the FAI can be doing a lot more than they are and can be dealing with this stuff better, and that's probably something that could be said on repeat for the last 20 years, no matter who's been involved, and there does seem to be some good people in there now. This decision, it shouldn't really even be on them. It should be above them.
Yeah.
This is the decision for the very, 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 very top.
Yeah.
And it should just be nipped in it can't be nipped in the bud now, because the bud is already bleeding, grown through the roof, but there's no... It's just a terrible situation.
Like, historically, sport, football has, you know, constantly been used as a political tool.
Yeah.
You know, I'm reading that John Wilson World Cup history book.
I know, we were actually talking about that this morning on breakfast, about all the different World Cups and how every single one of them, the venues that they were being hosted in, was under every sort of regime you can ever imagine, you know?
Exactly that. Like, you know, Henry Kissinger, I was reading a couple of weeks ago, like, was absolutely devastated that the US didn't get the World Cup. I think it was in 86 or 82 maybe. And he turned out to be a pretty terrible person.
There was one of the Mexican ones maybe in the 70s, was it?
Yeah, or? It could be 1970 maybe as well. Like, the fact, you know, sport and politics will always mix. But I think, you know, we're in a position where we, you know, follow the Irish football team. We cover the Irish football team, you know, every week in here. And I hope that sometimes we come at least be a little bit representative of the feeling of the Irish football fans. Obviously, there's a very diverse mix of Irish football fans and people have different opinions, but...
And you're never going to catch everyone. No. That's sort of the beauty of it, in a way.
Exactly. And I think, you know, over 95% of people are in support of these games not going ahead. And look, we'll revisit this over the next couple of weeks as well, in the next few months, and we'll chat about it again. But
you could hear a pin drop in the lobby. It was that quiet.
The referee letting play continue. One last throw.
It's obviously hard now because of the way that's all ended, but
Scales is up after it. Scales wins ahead.
I'll have that forever.
Yeah, there's the goal. That's Troy Parrott. It's unbelievable.
Inner Drive, Episode 1 with Troy Parrott, out now on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by Allianz, a proud sponsor of Irish sport.
Off the Ball.
I suppose the big news as well over this last couple of days is that Robbie Keane very much in a two-horse race, it seems, to be the next Celtic manager.
Yeah, I see Sky Sports as well are reporting only in the last couple of minutes as we're recording that there's been very constructive conversations between Dermot Desmond, I assume, and Robbie Keane.
Yeah, Dermot Desmond's obviously the largest majority shareholder with Celtic, and obviously controls a lot of...
Footballing matters.
Yeah, clearly. And, you know, the board seem to go with what Dermot Desmond kind of decides to go with.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, like, Celtic is such a unique football club because of its origins, and it's just a political institution. It is. Like, I struggle to find a more political football club than Celtic. Obviously set up by Irish immigrants in the late 19th century and set up to feed people who'd come over from, you know, trying to escape the famine and different things in Ireland. And I suppose the big thing is that Robbie Keane obviously played for Celtic, scored 16 goals on loan in 2010. But he chose to stay in Israel as manager of Maccabi Tel Aviv following the outbreak of war in Gaza in 2023. And he would say, and he's entitled to say, that both him and his coaching staff felt a duty to the players that they would be there until the end of the season. And he left at the end of the 23-24 season. And then he managed, he obviously went on to coach Ferencvaros, who's recently resigned as head coach of as well. So it looks like Robbie Keane had an eye on this job and moving back to the UK, or moving back to, you know, closer to this side of the world, the European football world. He was linked to the Slovan Bratislava job, and that looks like that's going to be Yaya Toure now, which is a bit mad.
Hopefully he's a better manager than Kolo.
Yeah. So, yeah, Celtic supporters are, I think, from what I've read and what I've seen, are largely up in arms if this appointment goes through.
They're not over the moon with it. They're not over the moon with it at all.
And there's debate to be had over, like let's say, the sporting merit of it. Like, he won one league out of two, basically, with Ferencvaros in Hungary, in a league where...
A few cups.
Yeah, in a couple of cups. And he got them to last 16 in the Europa League.
Yeah, and then did well with Maccabi as well, to factor that into.
He won a league title with them as well.
Yeah, and I can understand the queries are sort of around his CV, outside of the political things that come with that, which is obviously you can't ignore. But from a purely footballing context, I actually don't think, and I think from what feedback I've gotten, it seems to be that I might be in the minority here, but I don't think... I think this is the pool of managers with which Celtic are swimming in. You know, I don't think Celtic, the last couple of managers they've had, okay, Brendan Rodgers was...
He was there before.
I was there before and then had come back. So the link, it's not the total, like they went and got this guy who'd won FA Cups and won the FA Cup of Leicester and done well in Europe, whatever. They did get him, but there was a prior link there. Ange Postecoglou won a cup or an Asian Cup or something with Australia.
Yeah,
but outside of that, actually wasn't even qualified to manage in Europe when he did come over. No, read into your managerial certs, whatever you like. They then went and brought in Wilfred Nancy, which was an absolute mess, and everything around that. They've had Martin O'Neill there after Brendan Rodgers threw a bit of a tantrum and left.
Yeah.
So Celtic are a club that play in a league that, again, I've been told it's not a two-horse race anymore. I believe it when I see it. It's definitely, there's a couple of teams there. Motherwell were very good, but they've since lost their manager. Hearts had the opportunity of a lifetime and didn't get over the line. We'll see if they can replicate that again next season. But over the course of the last 4 decades, it's been a two-horse race, if not a one-horse race for a lot of that time.
Yeah.
Similarities can be taken from Robbie Keane's time with Ferencvaros. Obviously, they didn't win the league this time around. That can happen, but... Again, they would be disappointed with the fact that they didn't want to win the league, for sure. But I think there is a lot, you know, it's a league where majority of the teams are slightly somewhat redundant as far as the title race goes. So yeah. I don't think Celtic fans have every right to be up in arms about it because of the political side of stuff that we talked about, and him managing over in Israel and deciding to stay in Israel when things became a bit more clear, and then going over to Hungary where things aren't A1, shall we say, on that front either. So those concerns are absolutely valid, but I do think, and not that this really matters because everything has to be factored in equally, as far as the CV goes, I think Celtic's a pretty decent match. I'm not totally convinced that he's going to be the greatest manager ever. I haven't seen enough to warrant that, but I think if Celtic went and got a French manager who had no links to the club whatsoever and had the same footballing CV, I'm not sure they'd be as up in arms, especially if the Wilfred Nancy thing hadn't have happened. That would maybe, even if they were to go and get Jens Bertolaski, who obviously has gone to Toulouse now, but if they were to go and hire him, obviously he's done well in the Scottish League, but they wouldn't have been disappointed if they'd gone and hired him.
No.
They would have been happy enough with that. And obviously he's a good record over the course of the last season or so in Scotland. But, like... You know, I think Robbie Keane could have done a decent job managing Motherwell over the course of last season. We don't know that, of course. It's easy to say that, but like, you have to make a judgment when you're hiring a manager.
Yeah,
there's always a risk involved, but I don't think for a minute that Celtic can look at and can turn their nose up at that sort of CV. Basically, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, like Celtic, I think are at a level where they're competing for the league title and favourites to win it nearly every year, but can they kind of be that? In that, like, just that mid-tier European section.
Yeah, that's like, that's what they need to aspire to be. Yeah.
Like Ange Postecoglou came in and obviously done really, really well and was like a, maybe not the like the young as in, you know, relative terms, like, you know, he was the coach that came in and kind of...
Young in his career.
Yeah, he was young in his career, especially on this side of the world. And I think Wilfred Nancy would have been like something similar to that as well. Like he'd be in the MLS and done really well in the MLS. And yeah, like can they take him and maybe take him to the next level and he takes Celtic in tandem with him to the next level? I think that was the thinking behind those two appointments. I don't see those obvious appointments for Celtic now, obviously, because they're not obvious.
Yeah.
And I don't think Robbie Keane is on that level of manager either. I don't think he's that level of coach. He's been assistant at a couple of clubs in Borough and Leeds and obviously assistant at Ireland for a while as well.
Yeah.
But I don't, it's hard to judge Keane with, you know, like with small short stints at clubs the size of Maccabi Tel Aviv and at the club the size of Ferencvaros within their countries.
I
don't see, and as well, the thing as well, Dermot Desmond famously doesn't really care what Celtic fans think.
Yeah.
He banned them basically for, you know, a lot of the season. And then it was like, oh, we're in this title race. Let's get them back. Let's get a cracking atmosphere going again.
You would say the same thing though, right? Sorry, just as a slight slight caveat to that. And you can't read into too much what Robbie Keane has achieved in his last two kind of head coach managerial jobs.
Mm.
But if you went and did well with Celtic, you also couldn't, because they're the same situation.
Yeah.
You know?
Ultimately
like if he goes and does well with Celtic, it's like, okay. Like, you know, we know, everyone would say we knew you could do that because you did it here and you did it there. Do you know what I mean? It's the same, it's the same job, obviously, with the heightened thing of the links that he has to the club and the fact that Celtic, of course, are a far bigger club than both of the other two that he's been at before. And there is other pressures that come with that for sure.
Yeah.
But the job itself is the same. It's maintain us as the best club within our country because the resources we have far supersede all of the other teams around us and try to give us a run in Europe.
Yeah,
that's what it is. That's all the board would want. And like you know,
ultimately, Rodgers in Europe.
Yeah, like and Brendan Rodgers didn't qualify for them for Europe last year. They lost to Kairat Almaty.
Yeah, well, for the Champions League, yeah.
But yeah, of course, the Champions League. They got into Europa Cup, but they want to be in the Champions League. They don't want to be in Europa League. They don't want to be in the Conference League.
But
you know,
that's also like that's because Scottish football has regressed the way it has because it's eaten itself, because obviously Celtic fans and Celtic, you know, people associated with Celtic wanted to see the demise of Rangers, obviously these two are your biggest rivals, and Rangers vice versa to Celtic. But really the fact that the matter is that both of them need each other.
Yeah.
Without the two of them pushing each other to the next level, then that all kind of goes by the wayside, and Scottish football, the coefficient has come down quite a considerable amount.
Yeah.
Celtic Rangers used to be guaranteed to be in Champions League every year.
Yeah.
And now this is also a fault of UEFA as well, because that's just the way they've designed this new Swiss model of the Champions League as well. You've got like six English teams in it and all that
and
kind
there's
of
no
nonsense.
Drop down any
there's
of that
no
either.
Drop down either. But
I would say, just as a kind of closing point on that, I don't think he should take this job and I don't think they should hire him.
Right.
Personally.
So Robbie Keane shouldn't take it?
No.
Because
he'll be ran out there at the nearest possible opportunity. As soon as things go slightly, even remotely wrong, you're back where you were.
Yeah.
With Brendan Rodgers and all that sort of stuff.
And then he's damaged goods then after that.
Yeah, and then is on from Celtic's point of view, the fans clearly don't want him.
Yeah.
Nothing more needs to be said there. Not the fans are always right, but in a situation like this, when it's for these reasons... It's not that they don't want him because they think he's a bad manager. They might think he's a bad manager, but those aren't the main reasons why they don't want him. So why you would put yourself in a position when you can quite literally just not be in that position by not doing it.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
So, but it's going to happen. So I'm intrigued to see how it works out.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think it'll only accelerate into more protests, more Celtic fans do know how to mobilise.
And oh, they do.
It's a credit to them.
Be watching my back on the way out here.
No, it is a credit to them. And Yeah, unless Keane can come out and be like, well, this is my reasons, this is why I've done it.
That's
and if
true.
That's, if he can justify it, I don't think he can ever justify it,
no,
but if he
but
can.
If he can, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the Green Scene on Off the Ball is where Cadbury's a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. We're just going to wrap up over the next couple of minutes here, but there is a bit of news regarding Sinclair Armstrong. He looks like he's off to Turkey.
Yeah, Göztepe.
Göztepe,
yeah. They had been, he'd been linked with a couple of different moves to Turkey. I'm not sure if it was exactly Göztepe. I think they were linked before. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of other teams. I think Istanbul Başakşehir might have been interested as well around a similar time that Festi went over there. He's, of course, still there. It'd be interesting to see if he does make a move. But yeah, it's, look, for his personal life and for his career to a degree, it's probably not the worst thing in the world. He's going to be going off the beaten track a little bit as far as the on-watching public are concerned. Everyone knows, really, can at the click of a button. And you can still do that, of course, but there's a lot more rhetoric around him when he's at Bristol City and he's not playing that much and he's coming off the bench. And he might do something really well and then he might start and he'll be terrible, which tends to be how it kind of went for him at Bristol City. He's obviously there for the last 2 years, haven't been a QPR before. Someone who's got the profile to kind of be Anthony wants, you know? He has the athletic prowess to be a very valuable asset. As far as the Republic of Ireland senior team goes, it just hasn't really clicked for him. He's had moments of flashes, as I kind of alluded to there.
Yeah. Still quite young.
He's only 23, is he?
Yeah,
23. So, look, it's not the end of the road for him by any means. And it might be a nice one for him to get his career. I was going to say back on track. It wasn't totally off track.
No.
It was just stagnating, I suppose. And it's a unique one. It'll go one of two ways. But I do think, regardless of whether it goes the second of those ways, which is negatively, I don't think it would turn teams off, teams back in England rolling the dice on him. You know, he has attributes that teams are always crying out for. So if he does become available, I think it's a 2 year deal he's signing or something like that, I think.
Looks like
that's
it, yeah.
The talk, yeah. So yeah, if it's a 2 year deal and those 2 years kind of come and go, you could easily see him back in England playing in League One or something like that. You know, there'd be no issue there. So the very best luck to him. I'm a big fan of him. I hope he does well.
Yeah, my actually age him a few weeks. He's 23 in 2 weeks' time.
He's my age. Yeah.
When he just goes Tepe, it just reminds me of Ramal Palmer, who obviously plays for St. Pat's, and he's hell of a player. But you know, his move after goes Tepe was to St. Pat's. Like, I don't think Sinclair Armstrong would be thinking, I'm going back to League of I'm going to League of Ireland after he makes this move. It's, you know, he'll make this move and then try and probably get back to a team in the UK. Or maybe he follows the John Afolabi route and he plays on the continent, as Ben Symes, you know, most famously loves.
Yeah.
On that, just before, another transfer one, a transfer move for someone who's ending his stint is Will Smallbone at Southampton.
Yeah, his contract's obviously running out at the minute. He was out on loan at Millwall last year, had a very bright start to life there, picked up a pretty bad injury very early on, was out for the rest of the season, made a couple of appearances off the bench for them in the run-in as they chased automatic promotion, ended up in the playoffs. He didn't play any part for them in that, but they were obviously keen enough on his capabilities if they felt as though he warranted being kept around despite the fact he was injured for 7 or 8 months. So it will be interesting to see where he ends up. Mm-hmm. Obviously leaving Southampton now.
Premier League experience, international caps.
I wouldn't be all surprised to see Millwall just pick him up, to be totally honest. They're going to be up towards the top of the Championship again. As I said, they clearly think he's useful. Mm-hmm. Recently got married, or is getting.
I think I've seen this
on his honeymoon or something. Anyway, slightly beside the point, but I'm sure he'll give a couple of weeks to mull over it, enjoy his honeymoon, and then think about his career then after that, because he's still so young.
I think he could be a really good player for Ireland.
The thing about Will Smallbone is, as well, is he only really was sent out on loan for Southampton because Will still didn't fancy him.
Yeah.
And what the hell is Will still doing now?
Yeah.
Will still waiting for a job is what he's doing. So anyway, I don't have any personal vendetta against Will still. It's just an easy pun to make. But he didn't fancy a couple of our boys. Yeah. He didn't really fancy Ryan Manning. He didn't really fancy Finn Azaz. He certainly wasn't getting the best out of Finn Azaz. And he sent Will Smallbone away. So loads of stuff there as well. Aaron Connolly was posting today. He's picked up another injury. He came back towards the end of the season for Leighton Orient, who just about managed to stay up in League One. He had a brilliant start to the season for them. Was arguably kind of up there with Jack Moylan, was on track to kind of be having a similar sort of arc as far as League One seasons go. But he seems to have picked up a bad old knock again. He's in a sling in his Instagram photo. I don't know exactly what happened to him. So it's obviously something he's done to his arm in one way, shape or form. So disappointing again, of course, but hopefully he can get himself back in decent nick for the start of the season, which of course is a it's not that far away, but it's a little while away. There's enough time for him to kind of get back even early on in the season, which we hope he can do.
Yeah, it'd be good to just see him have a run of games, score a couple of goals.
Again, I think that's what he was doing.
Yeah, like I think he's definitely a player that could have maybe been involved in this Ireland squad had things gone differently for him, just that the way... the way it was with players playing in playoffs and different things over the last couple of weeks. Very finally, we have obviously the game against Canada on Friday.
Yeah.
Will you be staying up to watch it? It's your job.
Yeah, I could watch it the next day, do you know what I mean? So you're not my boss either, I'll do what I want.
That is also true, but...
I will watch it. I probably will watch it, yeah. I'd be Friday into Saturday is not a bad night for me, to be fair. Like, get my recovery in Thursday night, Friday, and then... Yeah. Give a good run into the game and watch it.
Yeah.
Hopefully Hamer's boys don't put me to sleep.
No. Will you be watching? If you're going to watch it and you want us to do a watch along, me, Matthew, and Ben,
and
Brona as well.
Yeah, Brona has to be here.
Brona has to be there to produce it. Yeah. Get in the comments and whatever, Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcast, Go Loud app, whatever it is. Just let us know. Email the green scene. @offtheball.com, and someday I will check that email address here. Who knows?
There's nothing in it.
Well, no, there was like spam emails at least.
Oh, yeah, true.
Before we go, the green scene on Off the Ball is with Cadbury's, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams. Prediction for Friday night against Canada, what players are you going to see?
I don't know what players are going to see. That could be anything. I don't think we'll see too much League of Ireland involvement.
No,
be my guess.
Obviously, great to see Dawson Devoy out there.
Absolutely, and doing his interview was great as well. Yeah. He was chatting. He was very, very good. Listen, a lot of nice interviews. A lot of likable guys.
Yeah,
I think we'll probably draw.
Okay,
I think we'll draw. We're on a good little run. We haven't lost in yonks. So we'll probably draw. But
you're trying to see what team Canada won.
Yeah, 1-1. Yeah, like a mid first half goal, like a 25th minute goal, and like a 67 minute goal.
Yeah,
probably do the job.
That's probably. I'd say Matthew Turnbull, who works for the FBI, does a lot of great work on the YouTube and the TikToks and stuff. And I actually love the behind the scenes training videos.
Yeah,
love
you do. You're
so
always
much
talking about them.
Just good, just great content, and that's what we like to do. We just like to provide great content. And speaking of great content, let's now end this podcast. But thanks very much for popping along and listening to us. You can obviously get us on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts, especially in the Go Loud app. Matthew, thanks very much for joining us. And we'll be back again next week with a review of the Canada game and, I guess, the Irish football season in general.
Hopefully Ben's here.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.